We've been talking about faith in the last several weeks, and we've got a couple of more on the subject of faith. Faith beyond belief. Now, I don't want to brag, but I'm a pretty smart guy. It all started back in elementary school. I found out that the Dunkin' Donuts in Kansas City would give you free donuts if you got perfect A's on your report card. They were great donuts, too. Big, soft, covered with this sweet, sticky glaze. I didn't make a B again. Love the donuts. Not until my second semester in second year in seminary when I took Bill Henson's history class and in church history, not Bill Henson, Bill Leonard's, and he gave me a B in church history. And I'll never forget it. I never have forgiven him for that. So, I've got three stripes on my robe, a BA, an MDiv, and a DMin, 3 degrees above zero. What's it mean? Well, whether you have a formal degree or on-the-job training, education is important. Isn't it? Education is important. You not only have better opportunities, but you enjoy life more. You appreciate the arts and the sciences more. You learn how to connect ideas from totally different fields. And all of it in useful ways. All in all, it's better to be smart than to be ignorant. I remember hearing about the seminaries when they were getting started, and the founders of Southern Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, were visiting churches in Kentucky, and one of the churches said, "We don't need pastors with degrees. All we need are pastors who are called by God. God doesn't need degrees." And the founder of Southern Seminary said, "God doesn't need ignorant pastors either." Degrees are important. Education is important. Knowledge is a good thing, but it isn't the best thing. Do you know what the best thing is? Well, being loved is a whole lot better. And loving is best of all. Even more important than knowledge or degrees or education. And that's what Paul told the smarty pants in Corinth. They were lording their knowledge over some of the dim bulbs among them, and it was all about eating meat offered to idols. Big deal in those days. Worship was a messy affair. It wasn't like it is today. It was really messy. There were sacrifices going on, folks, and there were animals being sacrificed on altars. And if you sacrifice an animal on an altar, it's kind of messy, isn't it? Any of you ever cooked a chicken? Some of you are smiling like one that was previously clucking. Yes, and when you do that, you have to it's a messy thing. And so suppose we're here in church and we're all gathered together and somebody says, I'm going to sacrifice a chicken. Well, yeah. It's a big deal. Sheep, goats, oxen, think about it. Slaughtered right there in front of everybody. And set before the idols and pagan temples. The idols didn't eat much. They were more than the roly-poly priests could barbecue for themselves. And so, anyway, they ate their fill. The priests did. And then they sold the rest of it to make a profit. And it was good meat, too, because you didn't offer up roadkill. You offered the best. You gave the gods, these pagan idols, the best you had. Just like we give our God the best we have. And there was much blood all over the place. It wasn't kosher. It seemed spiritually connected to the altars that it had been offered to. And you wouldn't, I mean, you'd feel a little bit creepy, wouldn't you, if you, you know, ate an apple from the table of Buddha. You even sliced up the rest of the communion loaf on Sunday and you made turkey sandwiches out of it. In those days, Christians gathered for worship on the first day of the week, celebrated the resurrection, shared communion, and then sat down to a covered dish luncheon. They called it the Love Feast. All kinds of problems arose with the love feast at Corinth. In the first place, they weren't sharing with each other. The rich folks laid out full 7-course meals, and the poor folks, some ate nothing at all, and some ate egg salad sandwiches. And the folks in the middle ate their tuna casseroles. It all made communion seem a little bit like a sham. There wasn't any love in the love feast. Everybody was watching out for self, taking care of their own. And Paul had to tell the Corinthians that the church is no place for any kind of activity like this. And no place for divisions of wealth or class or education. Because everybody that came to the table was equal. Everybody. And of course, that's how we see it here. Right? Wealth and class weren't the only divisions. One day at the love feast, one of the well-to-do deacons pulled out a hibachi and threw a slab of brisket on the grill, and it was grade A, prime quality beef, and everybody knows where that came from. Oh, you got that from one of the temples. Some of the visitors were so offended, they picked up their Tupperware and they left. I'm enhancing the story a little. Never to darken the doors of the church again. We're not ever going back to that place. They eat that bad meat. And others confronted the offenders. Challenged them. Where'd you get that meat? That didn't come from Walmart. And naturally, the Corinthian carnivores got defensive. They said, there's nothing wrong with this meat. No idol in the world exists. It doesn't matter where we got the meat. We can get it from wherever we want. There's no God but one God. We're not going to be haunted or spooked or there's no spirits. Tastes good. Try some. Besides, if you were as spiritual and as smart as we are, you wouldn't be bothered by such things. Here, have a bite. And besides, we're Baptists and we can do whatever we want. Nobody else can tell us what to do. It was a regular Donnybrook at Corinth that day. So wrote Paul to ask his opinion. They said, "Paul, what do you think about all this going on?" Well, Paul agreed with them about the meat. The barbecue wasn't demon-possessed. They'd had reason to eat it. And the idols weren't real, except in the minds of those who worshiped them. The Corinthian chow hounds were right. You can eat whatever you want. You can bring it to the barbecue. It's okay. And they had the superior theological knowledge of the day. But Paul said, "You're missing the point. Doing the right thing in the wrong way," Paul told them, "that can be as damaging as doing the wrong thing." And they were wrong to boast about their knowledge. They were wrong to be contemptuous of the sensibilities of their less knowledgeable brothers and sisters. They were wrong not to care how their behavior might affect the people around them. Just because you can doesn't necessarily mean you should. And when you do, well, the question is, where is the love? Knowledge has its limits. Being smart doesn't necessarily make you a better person in terms of character or ethics. And the Nazis who brought us the Holocaust were really smart people. And the lawyers who brought us Watergate were really smart people. And the bankers and the politicians who caused so much suffering with the failed savings and loans were smart people. In fact, the most ghastly crimes of the last century were perpetuated by some of the most educated people on the planet. Now, knowledge might actually improve your life, but by itself, education doesn't make you a good person. And I'd say it's better to be a loving barbarian than an arrogant sophisticate. And it's especially true of religious knowledge. You know, I think one of the things that scares people away from church is the fact that they don't feel like they know enough about the Bible or about God to come at all. And if I show up there, I'm going to be among people who know a lot more than I do. And I'm going to feel really stupid. So I just think I won't go at all. You think I'm wrong? And we come across these people who know the Bible backwards, forwards, and it makes them insufferable and arrogant and judgmental souls, and they bash everybody around them. Because they're not as righteous as they think they are. There's a slogan that's taught to clergy wannabes in seminaries: they aren't going to care how much you know until they know how much you care. Helmut Tielicke wrote a book for seminarians. It's called A Little Exercise for Young Theologians. And he talked about a young man who came to Christ in a fervent church. And so naturally, he felt called to bear witness, and he led Bible studies from his heart without any kind of reference to the commentaries. Didn't read the theologians, and the people, they just loved him. And they encouraged him to go into ministry, and so off they sent him to seminary, and after his first semester, he came home, and the people found him horribly changed. Now when he leads their Bible studies, he presents the latest form critical analysis of the text in response to their comments by saying, "Oh, that's typically pietistic," or "You belong to the school of Osiander," which is not yet comprehended the forensic character of justification. And they're appalled. And in short, Tielicke says, the student has grown intellectually, but not spiritually. He has a merely conceptual experience of the theological principles. I mean, he can talk about the great ideas of Martin Luther, but he's got no understanding of the life experiences. And he doesn't care to connect them. Knowledge without love leads to arrogance. Or I think of the story of Dan Yeary told about the time he was speaking on a college campus and he went to visit a young man who was in a dorm room, and the room was a study in contrast. The fellow he was visiting had several Playboy pinups, rock group posters above his bed. And above the bed on the other side of the room were several Jesus posters and a shelf of Bible commentaries and religious books. And he said, "Well, I see your roommate is a Christian." "Yeah," he said. "He sure loves Jesus, but he doesn't give a about me." They aren't going to care much about how much you know until they know how much you care. Good advice. Not just for ministers, for every Christian. And that's exactly what Jesus is demonstrating in the gospel story today. It's the first miracle Mark reports. He notes how impressed people were by it. They were all amazed, Mark says. They kept on asking one another, "Who is this? A new teaching?" And somebody with authority, he commands the unclean spirits to go away, and they obey him. What an interesting choice of words. Think about it, folks. They call what Jesus did a new teaching, and that he spoke with authority. Now, is Mark simply leaving something out here? What's the new teaching? What's the new teaching? Nobody remembered exactly what Jesus was talking about. In fact, we don't even know what Jesus was talking about. It clearly wasn't that big of a deal what Jesus was talking about, or somebody would have said something about it. We have nothing. Nobody remembered. I get that way. I get embarrassed. Sometimes people say, "You remember your sermon 3 weeks ago?" And I'm thinking, I don't remember what I talked about 3 weeks ago. I've got to think hard sometimes to remember. And you do too. Some of you were telling me, "Oh, we always remember your sermons." Yeah. Lying right here in church. My memory isn't that good. But I always think about the preacher who ordained me. His name was Glenn Henson. I can't tell you a word he said. What I can tell you is, I remember how much he loved me. That's what I remember. And how much it meant to me to have him pray over me. I don't remember a word he said. What I remember is, this is my friend. You know what I'm talking about, folks? They don't remember what Jesus said. But they remembered how he said it. And it was new, and he said it with authority. And they remembered what he'd done. He healed that guy. Remember that? Wasn't that something? And to this day, rabbis and preachers and seminary professors and a lot of Sunday school graduates love to talk about God. And we can sit for hours and talk about the Bible, folks. I love to talk about the Bible. What it says and what God is like and why the world is the way it is. And oh, but sometime, somewhere, somehow, folks, we're going to have to flesh out the conversation and become real and start showing love to people. That's the acid test, folks. For real rabbis and preachers and seminary professors and Sunday school graduates, we can talk the talk. We can talk all day about the Bible and Jesus. Can you walk the walk? Jesus embodied his teaching, and that's where the authority came from. That's where our authority comes from. That's where all of us have authority. Have you experienced the love of Jesus in your life? And was there somebody in your life who shared that love with you? And isn't that why you're here? And you want to know how to grow a church? Start loving each other. And start loving others. Well, Paul was right. Love's more important than knowledge. Do you think of Jesus as the smartest person that ever lived? Come on now. Do you remember Jesus' academic achievements? Anybody? What about his celebrated writings? No. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. So who's really smarter in the end? The person who knows a lot or the person who loves a lot? Now, I don't know whether the Corinthian barbecue bingers ever got Paul's point. They seem to have all the spiritual gifts except the love that Paul told them was the greatest and most necessary gift. And now faith, hope, and love abide these three, and the greatest of all is... love's even more important than belief. And knowledge isn't even among the top three. Isn't that something? So, we don't know about the Christian gristle grinders, but the rest of the church got it, and they held on to Paul's letter, and it became an enduring word from God. Some of the church got it. We're not quite there yet. We can look inside people's bodies without cutting them open, and we can put people on the moon, but we've got all kinds of information. If you can't find it, Rick, Google it, right? But you know what? We still haven't learned. How to love each other. Even in the church. Sad, isn't it? Well, you look like a bunch of smart people. And you know a lot. You know the greatest commandment? What is it? It's a test. Yeah. Y'all didn't know you were going to get a quiz, right? What? You shall what now?
Love the Lord your God.
With all your heart. Uh-huh. With all your heart. With all your soul. With all your mind. With all your strength. And the second is like it. To love your neighbor as yourself. Well, that was pretty good. You guys are smart. We got a smart bunch of people here. But the best thing, the smartest thing, is to learn how to love the way Jesus loved. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out, folks. Loving God. We love you because you first loved us. We trust you because you love us. And we follow you because you love us. So Lord, teach us to love. Teach us to love. In Jesus' name.